Hello and welcome along to the Property Academy podcast by Obis Partners. I'm your host, Tim McKnight.
And I'm Andrew Nicol.
And to the show, we're debunking property investor myths. Now, I was recently on News Talk ZB and the host asked me, are property investors the devil or are they an essential part of the property ecosystem?
Did they say that? Those words.
That was on my notes that got sent to me. And he was like, ha, it's a good topic, eh?
I wish I'd rung up. Now thinking in retrospect, I should have rung you up. Oh, hello, it's Brian here from the West Coast. And like, just put you some really curly questions.
You know what? That's basically what people sounded like. Oh, my name's Chris here. Chris.
Long time listener, first time caller.
And he started berating this guy, Chris. He was talking about Ollie Newland, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, classic property investor coach from like ages ago.
Back in the old days where property investors were very grubby, rented out washrooms and stuff like that, didn't they?
We'll come back to that. So Chris goes, oh, yes, you need to be a rentvestor. You need to be a rentvestor. And the host was like digging into it. And he's like basically berating the host. That's old Chris. And he says, yes, you need to listen to your learned friend talking about me. And I said,
learned friend.
You're a great judge of character, Chris. Anyway, we're debunking property investor myths. And the reason I wanted to do this is one of the listeners of the show, Nick, emailed me in. He said, look, Ed, I'm really concerned about interest deductibility, specifically the language he's seeing in the media. And what sort of things was Nick specifically concerned or worried about, Andrew?
That the language, the narrative that's being told to the general public is that landlords are evil and taking something away from society. And he was particularly worried that the interest deductibility changes are seen as a tax cut. And I can understand that. This is going to cause a division between people who are investors and people who are not. And it will make it more likely that these taxes will come back in the future.
And so the first myth I want to tackle is it a tax cut? And specifically, is it an unfair tax cut? And the main argument I'd make is, look, it is a tax cut, right? Because you were going to be charged more in tax and soon you're not going to be. So the amount of tax that you will pay as a property investor is going to go down. Now, look, we can play around with words, but effectively, it is not unfair for someone to call it a tax cut because the level of taxes is going down and you will pay less tax.
It's a cut from the current policy.
Now, that's a different question from whether it is an unfair tax cut. So I responded back to Nick and I said, what I see this rule as being about is making sure that property investors are not overtaxed. And my view of interest deductibility was that it severely increased the amount of tax that property investors were going to pay. There were some of you who might be losing $200 or $300 a week on your property, but on top of that, you're also having to pay $150 extra in tax, even though you are making a loss or a cash loss on that property. And so I would argue, well, it is a tax cut, but it's not an unfair one because the original taxes put on to property investors were punitive, they were unfair, and they caused rents to go up quite substantially. So yes, it is a tax cut. I wouldn't call it an unfair tax cut. I wouldn't call it a tax break in any means. And I don't think that any of it's unfair. But just if we're being honest with ourselves, it's a decrease in the amount of tax we're going to pay. It's not unfair if somebody calls it a tax cut.
Yeah, I think that the concern, obviously, though, is that the general public are going to see this as tax relief, so offsetting the tax that you pay.
And I think the second myth is that interest deductibility is taking away from the taxpayer. So I saw a statement put out by Te Pāti Māori co-leader Rāwiri Waititi saying, we're issuing a stern warning to landlords. If you take from the taxpayer, expect to pay it back as soon as we take office. So he's coming out and saying, well, if you guys are paying less tax, once we're in charge, we're going to come back and take all of that money back and we're going to retrospectively tax you. Now, that is highly unlikely to happen because it's highly unusual to implement tax policy retrospectively, which is exactly why we're not getting 60% deductibility for the prior year. Now, Andrew, let me ask you this. If property investors follow these new rules that National's about to put out there, is that taking away from the taxpayer?
No, because property investors operate within the rules. And if the rules change, you have to follow the new rules. So you, as a property investor, following the rules, are not taking from taxpayers. And I think what it misses is that generally property investors are the ones who pay a lot of tax on their normal income, their regular income. We are the taxpayers. That's why we can get a mortgage to go and borrow to buy an investment property. And most investors have one or maybe two investment properties at absolute most. That's by far the majority. These are just working class people trying to get ahead. And bringing the interest deductibility back means that property investors won't be paying additional tax.
Yeah, and that's not to say, just to be very clear, that if you don't own an investment property, you're not a hardworking taxpayer, no. Right? We're just saying that property investors, like everyone else, are taxpayers as well. And then there's a third myth, Andrew, that owner-occupiers don't have the ability to deduct interest from their incomes. And I remember this came up when we were in Tauranga speaking with Nancy Chen, who was a Labour MP at the time, saying, well, the reason we're taking away interest deductibility is owner-occupiers can't deduct interest from their income, so how come property investors can? What have you got to say about that?
It's quite a clever argument, but it's a bit of sleight of hand here, because the reason owner-occupiers can't use their interest to reduce their tax is because they don't pay tax on their homes anyway. So because they're not generating an income, generally speaking, on that home, it's not an income-generating asset that would trigger a tax payment.
Because they don't have income.
Correct.
There's no income, so there's no tax.
Yeah. But actually, a homeowner can deduct interest costs in some instances. So if you've got part of your home as a home office, or if you rent out part of your home to a tenant, i.e. home and income, or if you buy a holiday home and you rent that out as Airbnb for part of the year, these are the same rules for everyone, including owner-occupiers, if they're generating an income.
Yeah, because if you've got part of your own home as a home office, you're generating some income through your business, and then you could use some of the interest you're paying on your mortgage to offset the amount of tax you pay on your own business. The rules are actually the same for everyone. It's just that owner-occupiers don't generate an income. That's the whole reason. And I think that where that argument really fails as well is that they're only dealing with their interest. So if you're really concerned about, well, owner-occupiers can't deduct interest on their own homes from their tax bill, but what about their rates, their maintenance, their insurance, and any other cost? If it's truly fairness you're going for, property investors could still, under these rules, use all of those costs to pay less tax, things like depreciation as well. So property investors still had these, let's call it quote-unquote advantages. I wouldn't call it advantages, but you know, the people who brought the policy in would call it an advantage, but homeowners didn't. But no political party was ever talking about removing those as a deduction. So, I mean, it kind of says to me, well, is this really about quote-unquote fairness?
And I think, again, we've got to remember, well, let's say we introduced it that owner-occupiers could offset that interest cost. Well, what are you offsetting it against? Because there is no income, right? You can't offset it against your personal income if you're an investor or an owner-occupier anyway. It's ring-fenced to that property or that property portfolio.
Yeah, the rules are the same for everyone. And myth number four is that you shouldn't make money from a basic human need. And I see this a lot. Well, housing is a basic human need, so no one should be able to make money from it. And I think that is plainly wrong and incorrect in so many ways.
What about food?
Well, exactly. There are so many basic human needs that companies make money from, and they should make money from. So clothing. You've got places like Hallensteins, Glassons, and Barkers. They're all businesses. They're all there making money by selling clothes. But clothes are a basic human need. And from walking down the street...
Well, then why aren't you wearing any today?
From walking down the street, I'm glad it's a basic human need. If we think about food, Fonterra, Countdown, New World, they're all making money from supplying food. Farmers, they're making money from supplying food. If you think about water even... Yeah, you often get it for free if you turn the tap on, but these days more of the councils are charging you for your water usage as well. And then you've got the pump water bottles. They're making money off water. People who install water filters to improve the quality of your water.
Oh, they're all grubby.
Well, they're all making vultures. Money from it. Healthcare. You've got private hospitals. You've got health researchers like Fisher & Paykel Healthcare who are making money from creating a new respiratory technology. If you think about pharmaceutical companies like Pfizer, they're all making money from these basic human needs. And I would argue, of course the economists would, that we need these companies to make money. Now, we could have an argument about how much money, whether it's too much, whether there needs to be more competition. That's a different question from should they be able to make money at all? And the answer is, of course, yes. And the reason we want people to make money from selling clothes, from selling food, from selling water, from selling healthcare, or from selling pharmaceutical drugs is because if these companies aren't profitable, they're going to stop producing that thing. So if Glassons can't make money from selling clothing, they're going to stop providing clothing. But we need clothing. So we need businesses to make money from supplying clothing. Otherwise, we're not going to have as many options. We're not going to have as many people out there where we could go and get clothes that we specifically want from. Same with supermarkets. I want the supermarket to make some amount of profit. We might disagree on how much that might be and the different ways that you address that, but we need supermarkets to make some amount of profit. Otherwise, there aren't going to be as many supermarkets. Well, I want supermarkets. I want to be able to have some choices about where I can pick up my groceries from and the different products that I can specifically get from there. We want supermarkets to make money. Otherwise, we aren't going to have those businesses that are going to go ahead and give us the stuff that we actually want. So it's not that you shouldn't make money from a basic human need. You must make money when you provide a basic human need, because it is so vital that we have these providers that provide these basic goods and services that we need. So we want property investors to make money. We want developers to be able to make money from property, because we want developers to build more and more new houses, and we want more and more rental properties out there, which is going to help keep the price of rent lower than it would otherwise be.
Preach.
Have I ever told this story of the podcast?
Tell it.
It might get bleeped out. But my grandmother, when
I
was
I know this one. This is a goodie.
When I was a young lad, said to my mother, you know, that boy is either going to be a preacher, a politician, or a and we might have to beat that out. But I think I remember saying on
turns
one podcast.
Turns out you're just a property investor instead of one of those.
I was going to say, well, three.
Oh. Myth number five, property investors only take, and they just make things worse. And look, all property investors we work with here at Opus Partners invest in new builds. So when investors buy new developments, it means that there's a demand for new houses. So new homes get built. This increases the housing stock that's available for people to rent and means that there are more rental properties to choose from. So that creates some competition among rents as well. And those properties are built to a higher standard than the older properties. They're more energy efficient. We're able to house more people on the same plot of land. So I actually completely disagree with the fact that all property investors are taking. And if you go away from the Opus model for a minute, renovators, they're improving the quality of the housing stock. So there are old houses, old villas all around the country, which aren't up to a healthy home standard. Well, a lot of these people who are buying and flipping houses, or maybe just buying a property and renovating it and renting it out again, they're improving the quality of a home that someone can go and rent, or if it's a flip, an owner-occupier go and buy that property. And then again, if you're thinking about those BRRRR investors, if they're following the cash flow hacking principles and adding bedrooms to the homes when they renovate, then they're doing it to get a higher rental yield, yes, but now that same property can home more people. It can fit bigger families in there. So they're increasing the housing stock too in their own way. So property investors absolutely play an important part to the entire housing system.
And the last myth that I often get is that if all property investors didn't exist, everyone would be able to afford their own house. And again, that is plainly wrong. So if I take you back to 1991, that is the year where home ownership in New Zealand was at its highest, right? And property prices in Auckland, at least, were about 8 times cheaper than they were today. And yet, even back when house prices were significantly cheaper, back when houses were a lower proportion of the average household's income, 26% of New Zealand households rented. So over a quarter of households rented, even back in the golden heydays where home ownership was at its highest. And what that tells me is there will always be a portion of New Zealanders where renting is the better option. Now, it could be a better option for a number of reasons. If you're 18 years old and you're going out flatting for the first time because you're going to university, or you want to leave mum and dad's home and, you know, just start your way in the world, you're probably going to rent because you're not in the position to buy a house. And so there will always be a segment of young people and a large percentage of young people who are going to need to rent because that's the stage of life they're in. They're just starting out of their careers or they're off at university. So that's where rental properties will always be very important. The other place that will always be really important is when people move around the country for a time. So you might currently live in Wellington, but then you get seconded to Tauranga for a year. Well, you probably don't want to go and buy a house in Tauranga where you're only going to live there for a year, so you go and rent. So rental properties are very important. And then there are some people who are very poor, who don't have very high incomes. And so there will always be a portion of New Zealanders who will never be able to get a mortgage and so will need warm, dry rental properties to live in. So there is that segment of New Zealand, I kind of estimated about 26%, where there will always be people who need to rent, even if we significantly increased home ownership. And so those people need to be housed. And my question is always, is it better that people like Andrew and me and people like you use our own money to go invest and buy those properties, or do we want the government to go do it? And with today's population, that represents something like 500,000 houses in New Zealand. So would I rather the government's money go to buying 500,000 properties and renting them out to everyone so no private landlords exist? Or do we want that money in better roads? Do we want that money to be invested in better healthcare? Do we want that money invested in better schools and education? And if we think about what we read a lot about in terms of what the government needs to do today, we probably need much better healthcare, hospitals, schools, education, roads, and a number of other things. So I kind of think let landlords use their own money to supply the housing, and there will always still be some rogue landlords out there who do bad things, but that's probably a better solution compared to the government having to buy 500,000 houses at the expense of investing in something else.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that sometimes we forget. The government is a business as well. There's only an amount of money that they have to be able to invest in different things. And if you do give to one sector, you are having to take from another. And I, for one, and it's not because I'm a property investor, it's because I do think that their money has a far greater impact going into education and healthcare, etc.
And look, I think we're probably preaching to the converted. If you're listening to this, you're probably on board with us, right? But this is about trying to give you guys the tools and the arguments so that, you know, if you do get into a bit of a scrap at a family barbecue, not a physical one, an argument, you know, around it, and specifically around these tax cuts, that, you know, you've two things. First of all, got the arguments that you can say, oh, well, what about this? What about that? But then also just have confidence in yourself. Sometimes that you can get a bit knocked if you're reading a whole heap of articles saying that property investors are bad people and that we shouldn't be doing it. We shouldn't be making money off property. Just to feel a bit better about yourself and say, actually, no, we need people to make money out of basic human needs. Otherwise, those basic human needs won't be provided for. Right, let's wrap it up there, but please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. It really does help us get the message out to more people. And hey, I want you to come to a webinar on Tuesday, the 16th of April, 7 p.m. We are talking about all of the government's tax changes, because the truth is, not every tax change is going to be good for property investors. Some property investors are going to pay more tax. Some property investors are going to pay substantially less tax. We're going to take you through the three major tax changes the government's going to bring in this year, and what they specifically mean for you. If you want to come along to that, tap or swipe over the cover art. The link's down in the show notes, or just go to opuspartners.co.nz/webinar. Thanks for listening to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Steve McKnight.
And I'm Andrew Nicholl.
We're going to be back again tomorrow with even more daily strategies, tactics, and insights to help you get the most out of the New Zealand property market. Until next time.